Okay, we're going to talk about the when the carnation occurred, sort of. They kind of introduced it last week. I have on a calendar here, we have our calendar for this year, December 2017. We have December 25 on a Monday. And traditionally, it's been held that Christ was born about 4 B.C. That's probably, there's better scholarship now that probably puts it at 1 B.C., which I've taught that before, too. So that still seems like to be a better date. But I'm sure everybody's going to still talk about the 1 B.C. And the reason that there's this discrepancy here is that when Herod died, there was a full moon, Josephus says, or not a full moon, an eclipse of the moon. But there's also an eclipse of the moon on the 1st. So, you know, you have this discussion, and probably the 1st B.C., 1 B.C. is probably the better date for the birth of Christ based on Herod's death. All right, just to mention that and why I put that up there, because the birth of Christ would be December 25, our calendar, 1 B.C. Okay, next week, TLW, you know what that means? The Lord willing. Next week, the Lord willing, we will be back in our Revelation study. We're not that far from the end of it, you know. We have another lesson in probably at least one more lesson in chapter 20, the end of the beast. That's why I waited till next week to start it. Still kind of in a holiday spirit, people coming and going. So we continue our interruption today with another miscellaneous study on the day of the Nativity, which I introduced last week somewhat. When did the incarnation occur? And it did not occur on the day he was born. The incarnation occurred on the day he was conceived. And that day is observed on our Western calendar, December 25. Now, I say Western calendar because the calendars, if you do any looking in the history, you find that there are all kinds of calendars. And they make mistakes. And some calendars account for a leap year in a certain way. The Jews counter it for another way. So, but somehow you always got to end up, the sun rises the same, and the eclipses are on the same day. But you have to make these calendars reconcile. And so when we talk about Western calendar, it's a different calendar. Even in the West, it was adjusted by, you know, 11 days sometime in the, what, 17th century. So it isn't a new thing that these calendars get adjusted. So we call it December 25th on our Western calendars. I did this lesson. I looked it up. It's 15 years ago. I said, wow, that was 2002. That's 15 years ago already. I mean, we got kids that are graduating from high school that were not even aware of the last century. Okay, I did this lesson 15 years ago, actually in 2002, and thought it might be an interest even after our Christmas. Since it is more factual, wrong word, it's a wrong spelling there, than emotional and possibly controversial, we waited for the holiday to pass, lest we upset anybody's scruples. And you can get all kinds of, and not so much in our church anymore, I think we sort of worked through some of this stuff, but there was a time when, you know, the observances of Christmas was kind of questioned. This is a statement on this picture here. A blanket of snow covers the little town of Bethlehem, which seemed to me a little bit strange because of the roof lines and so forth looked to me like Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, rather than Bethlehem, Israel. Peter Bruegel's oil painting from the 1560s. Although Jesus' birth is celebrated every year on December 25th, Luke and other gospel writers offer no hint about the specific time of year he was born. And my main source of my article for 2002 was Andrew McGowan's article, How December 25 Became Christmas as it originally appeared in the Bible Review magazine. Since then, we got others. Since then, we have this one. I came across this one, and I put this up on the board because if you have interest in this at all, it's really a good article. It's kind of long and kind of tedious, but when you get into date things, it is that way. That's the way that kind of stuff is. So this is a newer article, 2015, and it's in JETS. That's called the Journal of Evangelical Theological Society, a conservative magazine, or kind of a, what do you call those things? 2015. So you might want to look it up. It's online. You can download it and read it, and I'll, you know, borrow from him, although I didn't use him extensively because it's a lot of talk. The way he does it, he divides the view of the December 25th as the legitimate day into three ways of looking at it. One would be the history of religion's theory, which would be sort of like the ideas where, you know, Christmas is a pagan holiday because it has all these pagan things in it. The Puritans thought it was illegal in Puritanism to observe Christmas, and even Spurgeon was against observing Christmas. We have the Jehovah's Witness, and there are probably a bunch of others that discount the Christmas based on it being a pagan holiday, based somehow to the winter solstice, or whatever you call that, in the time of the spring, the coming of the spring. That's one. The second one is just the calculation theory, which is you take all that you know about the Bible dates, and there are many more in there than you think. You don't think sometimes that you can figure a date out in the Bible, but you can. There are a lot of them, and that's what our guy does, Simmons. He goes through and pulls these out, and that's why it's kind of tedious to read, because it, you know, this kind of stuff's hard to follow intellectually. So the calculation theory is derived from history, from text, events, you know, moons, Josephus, and so forth. And he spends most of his time on the calculation theory. And when he gets done with that, he says, I don't think that's right. So I read about 20 pages. So I wonder what he really thinks, because it would save me a lot of time. So I went to the last page, and he said, well, I really think that the best argument for 25th is basically the tradition of it. Now, we don't mean tradition from the 7th century or the 10th century, but we're talking about the traditions in the early church days. And we're not going to ever find this provable or, you know, without any doubt. So I don't think the Lord left us that day for us to observe in that way, but he left us enough to know that it's probably very likely right. And again, with the shifting of the calendars, you got to be careful what day you land on. But there's reason to pick December 25th as one that fits our calendar and would be the right day in the way the sun orbits, the earth orbits the sun. Just to mention again, we have Rome. This has become a new study for me, or new awareness in our eschatology, even, that Rome is divided into east and west. We always think of Rome as just the west, the yellow part. But Rome had just as much power and authority, and sometimes even their rulers came out of the east. So we have this division of the east and the west, and therefore we have two different dates for the birth of Christ following these two. And you want to notice here that Greece is in the east. Greece is in the east, not in the west. And remember when the whole 10-nation predictions we were, you know, making about the Western Europe's going to be the place where Antichrist comes from. And in fact, we already know that 10 nations are, and we all said Greece is going to be one of those. But really, that really doesn't work too well, because Greece is really not part of the west. Greece is really part of the east, because that's where the Eastern Orthodox churches are. And anyway, just for you to know that. And it actually goes further east than this. It goes clear up to almost to India at some point. So we have these two divisions. Just remember that. And most of everything that happens in the Bible is in the eastern part of the Roman Empire. And just to remind you of how this works, it stays as one church really till about, well, 1054. Then they call it the Great Schism. We have the Orthodox continues on, I guess depends on your point of view, and the Roman Catholic breaks off. We have the Martin Luther with the Reformation breaks off. The Anabaptists are in here. Church of England, its own branch. So, therefore, even the Western Church splits to a large extent. So, just to remind you of why we're going to end up with two dates. Now, our Western culture, secular or religious, has observed December 25th as Christmas. This recognition is evident in the observation of some well-established practices. And this is really interesting to me, that some event that is so maligned by, like the birth of Christ or him as a person, so maligned, yet it is so universally, his birth is universally observed. Even the pagans get the day off. Even the atheists get the day off, you know, when they, something they don't believe, but they still get the day off. We have a few things to mention. First of all, we have the day off. Not having Christmas off from work is a mere feared possibility. Always worry about, you know, people would worry about, oh, I got to work on Christmas. That's kind of sad. Even the government allows the secular office to be closed. Banks take a holiday. Your mail will not go through. And even Best Buy is closed. And I might now even add, Hy-Vee is closed on Christmas Day. As far as I know, the only day in the year they're closed. We have a day here that's of some significance. Then we have, starting in October 31st, the beginning of the unequal decoration of private homes. The commercial centers and the ACLU is asleep, where they are asleep. We have it also in the public square. Trees are chopped down, brought into the house, and decorated with anything. Decoration themes vary from the sacred angels to Disney. I have a Christmas tree ornament in the form of a diesel locomotive. So anything that will not topple the tree is within good taste, so they say. Added to these are the celebrations at offices, neighborhoods, and in the bars across town, which says Christmas is coming. And then there are, or there used to be, a forgiving spirit in the air, a form of civil truce, a temporary laying down of arms between brothers for a season. And we have the song that says, even the traffic lights twinkle red and blue, or red and green, I'm sorry. Now, for some of us, it's easy to turn to chapter 11 for Christmas bankruptcy protection, saying, count me out. They say that these practices have no resemblance of a celebration of the incarnation when God meets man or man meets God, however you want to put it. Further, they say all this is too serious a matter to be celebrated by exchanging frivolous gifts and be caught up in a fascination of a party. But wait a bit. Remember Scrooge? He should have stopped and listened to his reasonable friends who were trying to assist the grouch. Being against something is good, especially if it's evil. So before we turn into an insufferable Grinch, let's look back for the development of the observance of Christmas. Well, we can have two lines of investigation. One is the practice of Christmas itself and the day observed as the birth of Christ. Well, let's dispense the first quickly. Much has been written and documented about the practices of Christmas, having pagan roots, even borrowed from Babylon mystic religions. And we have Hyslop's book, Two of Babylons, to support that. And I'm not saying there aren't a lot of good things in that book. To this we assent and do so without argument. There are a lot of stuff been added to Christmas that has pagan origins. However, these practices were more lately gotten than the practices in the early centuries of the church. So they weren't part of the original church observation. Now, from the 12th century on, with the climate of mysticism in the Roman church, she adopted with ease many of the Babylonian pagan practices. Of course, for us, Protestant, Anabaptist, Baptist, whatever, there is no connection to the ancient, and thus we make no effort to carry on any message from Babylon. Now, Spurgeon would have been one of those in that first category that I mentioned to you of the three. Those who follow the custom of observing Christmas follow not the Bible, but pagan ceremonies. So even Spurgeon has considered Christmas a taboo. Well, this is really not any different than Paul's instruction about eating meats offered to idols. Some could, but some would not, because they knew its history and were not able to, in their stage of development, to overcome their scruples. In this, then, it becomes a personal conviction, of course. We need to honor each other's level of maturity or immaturity. Paul says in Romans 14:5, one person regards one day above another, and another regards every day alike. Doesn't that kind of fit Christmas? Each day must be fully convinced in his own mind. So we make no defense for decorations, usually reduced to the Christmas tree, which usually gets the big heat, nor do we feel the necessity to educate the unfree. And if somebody doesn't like a Christmas tree, I don't care if it does or doesn't, I don't have to educate them to say, well, you ought to have one. I don't need to do that. Let them alone. Again, we have some help in deciding to decorate or not to decorate from Scripture. Romans 14:23, but he who doubts is condemned if he decorates, because in his decorating is not from faith, and whatever is not from faith is sin. So you can put that in there. Anything would fit there. Okay, that's how we deal with the first one. The second issue now is the date. Now we move to the second investigation, that is December 25th, as the day to observe birth of Christ. The Bible gives no date, and some suggest a spring birth. We had this last week. Luke 2:8, the shepherds were in the fields watching the flock. But I say, where else would shepherds be, you know, except in the fields with their flock? December weather in Jerusalem, I checked out recently, is the lows are 41, the highs 54. By the way, John Kerry just got there yesterday, so he's there now, Tel Aviv, actually. So he said, I think I said 54 was the temperature he was looking at. So December weather is not impossible for grown sheep to be outside, so there really is no reliable clue regarding the season. And we find out these are temple sheep, and temple sheep need to be offered throughout the year, so they're out there probably not in just the spring of the year. Doesn't help a bit. Although it probably was in the spring of the year. No, we don't know. Since the Bible does not lay out the birth date, when did December 25th become the day observed? That's our question. The first note of this day is mid-4th century, 335. It is in a list of dates remembered by the church. We have the deaths of martyrs, bishops, and the birth of Christ. Christ was born in Bethlehem of Judea. Now, a widely repeated theory is that Christmas has pagan origins and that Christians first introduced it to conquer or counter the pagan festival of the Invincible Sun, which we know is the date of 21st of December, the first day of spring, or it's not the first day of spring, it's actually the first day of the winter, but you know, days start getting shorter, the sun gets longer, the sun becomes dominant again, so that's the Invincible Sun coming back. This celebration was created by the Roman Emperor Aurelian in 254 to mark the winter solstice. Now, again, the date moves from 21st to 25th. It depends on what calendar and how you're doing the adjusting. So for us, it's two different dates. At some time, it probably was the same date in some calendars. So this Saturnalia, had existed hundreds of years before 254 and thus was observed during the time that Christians were subjugated to intense persecution of the Romans. Very important point here. Christians were persecuted in these first centuries. All right, and the last of these was Diocletian before Constantine, the worst of all. So with this in mind, they were persecuted, and these ones that were persecuted honored these pagan dates. So are we to believe that Christians who had fought against the influence of Saturnalia, who were disenfranchised, imprisoned, executed by the Roman authorities, would then or in a few decades adopt a new Christian festival using elements of a pagan one? Probably not. Now, there's one possibility here that might be true, and that is they were trying to subjugate the old pagan observances with Christian ones. But still, you got to step over this problem. Now, we know they observed certain things about the Nativity because in the 2nd and 3rd century, there are paintings of the Adoration of the Magi showing that the Nativity was an important theme for Christians long before 335. And here we have a picture of, and you got it, three Magi coming with their gifts being presented to the Christ child. It makes more sense to believe that the Nativity festival existed in the early church for centuries and that Constantine, Pope Gregory, 601, and others added pagan elements to existing Christmas Nativity festivals as we now know as Christmas. But then December 25, why the date? By the way, the Christian world is divided, had this before, as the Eastern and Western church. Now, this is not the evangelicals as such, but the church as in Roman Western and Greek Eastern. And with that division, there exists a second date. The Eastern churches observe January 6, or 12 days later than 25, and that's where we get the stupid song called 12 Days of Christmas. I could say it's a stupid song because it is a stupid song. Sorry. They need to write some new songs. Gent is the Epiphany, or for the Western Church. In other words, this is when the wise men showed up. All right. Commemorating the arrival of the Magi from the East. All this seems a bit too convenient. But we are on a rabbit trail here. So back to the main point. Why December 25 or January 6th? There's another way to account for the origins of Christmas on December 25. Strange as it may seem, the key to dating Jesus' birth may lie in the dating of Jesus' death at Passover. This view was suggested by the modern world by French scholar Louis Duchesneau, or whatever his name is, from France, in the early 20th century, probably a Catholic, and fully developed by American Thomas Talley in more recent years, and I gave you one from Simmons. But they are certainly not the first to note a connection between the traditional date of Jesus' birth and his death. By the way, it's 9 months difference. Tertullian of Carthage, date, reported the calculation on the 14th of Nisan, the crucifixion date, was the date of Christ's crucifixion. And again, these dates move around because the Jews take these dates off the calendar, off the moon. It's very, very complicated. Again, that's why Simmons goes into this stuff and my mind goes like, I don't really care that much about this question. So I skip over, but that's the point. The Jews set the date of the of the Passover, and we believe, we've talked about, that the Passover was observed on Wednesday. The crucifixion occurred on Wednesday on the day of preparation. Gives you 3 days, 3 nights to get to Sunday for the resurrection. So I'm agreeing with that. So that date is equivalent to our March 25 on the Roman calendar. Remember, our Easter floats by the moon, too, but it's made up. I mean, there's no connection to the Passover. In fact, it was picked to make a date that did not sit on top of the Jewish Passover, which is, I think, such a terrible mistake. Because what an apologetic you'd have if you could have the death of Christ on the day and the time of their Passover. I mean, it would just be perfect. But no, Christians knew better, and they took it off of that day because they didn't want to have anything to do with the Jews. Bad stuff. Okay, so the date is equivalent to our March 25 on the Roman calendar. This, of course, is 9 months before December 25. Thus, Jesus was believed to have been conceived and crucified on the same day of the year. Now, there's an adjustment made by some. Again, we're going to talk about 3 days here, so to me, there's a lot of looseness here. Some want to make the resurrection as this day, but I've always understood it to be the crucifixion, not the resurrection. But I can understand why you want to make it the resurrection rather than the crucifixion. But it works best to have it the crucifixion, not his resurrection. Only 3 days difference. Now, the idea appears in an anonymous article titled On Solstices and Equinoxes from the 4th century in North Africa. Therefore, our Lord, quoted here, conceived on the 8th of the calends of April in the month of March, which is our March 25. This is the day of the Passion of the Lord and his conception, for on that day he was conceived and on the same he suffered. Based on this, the treatise dates of Jesus' birth, the treatise dates Jesus' birth to the winter solstice. Again, not exactly, 4 days off. Note, with the different calendars, mistakes are made, leap years not accounted for, and so on, so the winter solstice has been noted in dates from 21 to 25. Now, Augustine, 4th century, early 5th century, was familiar with this association, for he writes, "For he, that is Jesus, is believed to have been conceived on the 25th of March, upon the day also he suffered, but he was born according to the tradition on December 25th. The Eastern Church, the same associations were made, however, using two corresponding dates of April 6th and January 6th. So we have now then somewhat two independent church parts calculating Jesus' birth on the basis of Jesus' death and conception, which took place on the same day without any connection to a pagan holiday. Now, connecting, we're going to have some time here, so you got some questions. Don't ask them. I know where I am in my lesson. I'm about done here. Okay, connecting Jesus' conception and death in this way will certainly seem odd to modern readers, us. But it reflects an ancient and medieval understanding of the whole of salvation being bound up together, which I like. One of the most poignant expressions of this belief is found in Christian art. In numerous paintings of the angel's Annunciation to Mary, the moment of Jesus' conception, the baby Jesus is shown gliding down from heaven on or with a small cross, a visual reminder that the conception brings the promise of salvation through Jesus' death. So off this note on this piece of art, the baby Jesus lies down from heaven on the back of the cross. In this detail from Master Bertram's 14th century Annunciation scene, Jesus' conception carried with it the promise of salvation through his death. It may be no coincidence then that the early church celebrated Jesus' conception and death on the same calendar year, March 25, exactly 9 months before, on December 25th.